Good morning. We're going to be talking about the next version of FinVats today, the 3.0 release. But I'd like to introduce some of our project team members and fellow presenters here today. Starting out with Mona Ayres, who's our data analyst. Mona has a BS degree in mathematics and computer science and has been in the IT industry for 24 years. Since arriving in Northrop, she's been a data architect on the countermeasures and response application and serves as a data modeler for FinVads. Prior to coming to Northrop and CDC, she was a consultant with Novartis Pharmaceuticals. There she developed one of the first applications in the country that enabled pharmaceutical manufacturers to quickly and efficiently calculate, monitor, and comply with government-mandated pricing and reporting. In addition, she was with McKesson Corporation using HL7 messaging for the past decade. She's also been in Europe and Latin America to develop business processes and interoperable solutions. Secondly, our next presenter would be Vaidyanath Iyer, and he would be talking about the services interface and, in addition, some of the APIs and the programmatic access to FinVads. Iyer comes to us through OntoReason, another one of our contractors on VADs. He has been involved with this project since 2008, and prior to that, he was a senior computer scientist with Computer Science Corporation and was with Merck from 98 to 2001. Prior to that, he was with Covansis, a clinical trials company, from 95 to 98. Iyer has a master's in computer science, and he's responsible for the design of the public health, basically the applications access and distribution. And prior to that, he worked with the CDC NEDS application for 7+ years as an architect, designer, and developer, and also deployed other applications such as the laboratory results network deployment aspects. And he also has managed and developed architectural aspects and net security systems. And our third speaker comes to us from SAIC. So as you can see, we tend to work with a lot of companies on VADs, which we like doing, and all of you going forward in our collaborative environment, which is part of our theme, as you've seen in this conference. Robert Dodge comes to us from SAIC. He's got a bachelor's in computer science. Robert is a software architect with 15 years of experience on technology projects in defense, medical, and financial arenas. His primary focus is on Java and .NET and Unix. Other areas include application and system security. His background includes work for government agencies, including Department of Defense and the private sector. He's been with SAIC since 2005. And he's also worked on the NEDS PAM platform, the NEDS base systems, the NEDS brokering tool, and FinVads. So we are quite pleased to have a very qualified team working with us, and hopefully you like what you see in the next generation of VADs. We are definitely open to all your suggestions and look forward to working with you. My name is G.B. Kasternoth. I'm the CDC project manager on this project. So getting started, we were going to go over a quick introduction of FinVads and where we see some of these pieces going, and would like definitely elicit your input. Then we'll delve a little further into the product mix, starting with the data model, the web services, and one of the clients, which is an authoring framework for terminology development. It's our start on a distributed terminology development environment, and then the website or the user interface for FinVads. In terms of FinVads, some of you might be quite familiar with FinVads. It is a web-based enterprise vocabulary system for accessing, searching, and distributing the vocabularies used within Fin. And what that generally equates to is we serve not only the programs within the CDC network, but also the Fin requirements in terms of the messaging guides, the mapping guides, and all the standard development organization or SDO vocabulary that's referenced in the guides. And we have actually some vocabularists and terminologists who I'm trying to locate. Sundag Ganeshan, sitting in the front right, is our resident MD and expert in vocabulary. So we also work with programs such as environmental, laboratory, biosense, I go on and on, but we deal with different programs in terms of developing the vocabulary, getting it into a context, and creating value sets, because that's the value add when you come to FinVADS. You could just as well go to an SDO site, SNOMED, LOINC, ICD-9, et cetera, and get the vocabularies, but subsetting it and creating value sets or domains that are of programmatic need is the additional step, and distribution mechanism would be FinVADS. Some of the partners in FinVADS are CDC programs, public health agencies, HL7 organizations, and the new arena for us is the RIO, Regional Health Information Organizations and Health Information Exchanges, and also the public health departments. FinVADS actually is one of the top applications in terms of usage within the Fin bevy of applications. It includes over 86 applications in a portfolio of 10 programs. So in terms of the usage of the current FinVADS, not talking about the next version of FinVADS, we get at least 220 to 250 easy per day, depending upon when we release new programs and new guides go out. So it's a pretty active application in terms of the Fin set of applications. So some of the other uses for FinVADS, it's a single source of standard vocabularies to CDC and its public health partners. And the next item is it is one of the enabling applications for standards dissemination and usage within the Fin systems, because we do work quite closely with different standards organizations to take what's proposed at a standard level and implement it in an actionable programmatic sense. And it also supports semantic interoperability in terms of getting to a level via local mapping and so forth of consistent information exchange among trading partners. In terms of FinVADS, obviously the stuff we've talked about thus far is good, but in terms of the reality, we do face a lot of challenges that all of you face in terms of vocabulary, terminology, and generally software development. So in terms of FinVADS, moving from an ideal of semantic interoperability and standardization into consistent use of terminology, equating it to a mapping guide and Fin certification, walking down that tree with an interface engine, it has some challenges. So those are some areas that we strive to in terms of delivering an application such as FinVADS that can solve or at least aid that process. And also, as we stated earlier, VADS is more of a centralized model at this stage. As you'll see in the 3.0 version, which we're gonna show you today, in a PowerPoint format, not the actual application, is going towards an architecture for a distributed format. And also, the locally defined terms and coded values tend to provide some challenges in terms of translating and mapping to a standardized format and nomenclature so disparate systems can exchange information flows. The current state of FinVADS, so what do we have in FinVADS? And we are on the 2.5 product cycle right now with a upcoming release. There are approximately 300 value sets. Again, value sets are the domain level extraction almost of a standardized coding environment. We have 300 value sets that serve different programmatic needs. And over 700,000 concepts in FinVADS based upon consolidated health informatics and CHI standards. And we also have a website where users can download value sets, value set concepts, and other parts of the vocabulary object model. In terms of the download capability of the current VADs, we have text, Excel, and other formats that will support those. So let's talk a little bit about what we're going to present today and where we are taking this. It's projected for fall of this year, and we're keeping our fingers crossed on that. If not, it'll be 09, January. And it actually, some of the impetus behind the next generation of FinVADs has come from programs. It has come from the vocabulary community of practice that is meeting a few times this week. And we also have a FinVS mailbox that we actively monitor. And lastly, we are going to be initiating a FinVADS users group. And some of you might be familiar with a FinMS product that has a users group that's been pretty robust for the past 3+ years. So we'll probably be doing the same thing with FinVADS. And these are mechanisms for you to participate with us in a collaborative format to see where you would like to take FinVADS. And as we're stating, we are really moving into a format where we do want to work with you to make it a product that's useful to all of you in terms of the use of the product. One of the other drivers behind the next version of FinVADS is to ensure adherence with a lot of the CDC standards and also some of the CHI recommendations. And the current version of FinVADS, we have periodic content releases that are driven by mapping guides and the messaging specifications, and at times by programmatic needs. And in terms of the product, the content release cycle, we generally follow the programmatic needs. Meaning, if an SDO such as UMLS or Loink or SNOMED release an update to their vocabulary, we generally currently queue it up and release it in the next content cycle. So that has its advantages and challenges for different programs, because not everybody likes a homogeneous solution. So the model that we're going towards is a little more dynamic extraction of the updates, and the API, the service layer that you'll see in some of the data models will actually support your ability to get either view, if you want to think about it from a database context. The next element is some efficiency, and this is getting a little bit in the bowels of this product, but some enhancements we're doing on our side is to make the product more efficient in terms of the maintenance of the vocabulary. And next, you'll see a universal authoring framework, which is a lot of the work that our vocabulary authors do that create the value sets that work with the SNOMED and the Loink organizations to determine how to craft a value set. So there is a bit of governance needed there, meaning the updates and the quality control around it. I'm not saying it'll be ideal, but the governance model is a process around the updates of the vocabulary. And also the services, which currently what we have with FinVADS is more of a application programmatic interface or API that gives you access to FinVADS. And we have had numerous requests for a services model around FinVADS. So what you're going to see today is a start on a service. It's not the end goal on the service, because currently within the CDC environment, we don't have secure web services going external to CDC firewall. So what we're talking about, I hate to get technical here, but we're talking about services within the CDC domain, if you can picture it, for the authoring and governance for people. Some programs have vocabulary authors. We have one sitting here, but you know, Syndac works 60 hours a week, and you know, I think he needs a break at times. So we have other programs who do have vocabularists. So what you're going to see a little later is an authoring environment accessible through a service via a governance model to regulate the activity to hit the same data store. So that's through a service. Another service which we're going to have, and that's secure, utilizing CDC single sign-on and their security infrastructure. Another service will be the outward partner-facing service, which will be non-secure, akin to the current FinVAD's website, where you will be able to go through the service, and Iyer, when he speaks, will give you a little more details around that. But partly where we're going with that is there is de facto, it's not even a standard yet, but it's going towards one, the common terminology service to service specification out of the HL7 community that uses a lot of the V3 data structures to deliver vocabulary and messaging. They separate those into those two sections. So what we're doing, and all of you are free to join that community, it's through HL7 and Mayo Clinic. So we are a participant in that. It's through HL7, and so we're monitoring it and building this so it's compatible with that specification when it does come out. So in terms of VADs, and I'm probably taking a lot more time, I'll speed through this, I'm sorry. There is an internal data model that you're gonna see. The next major component is a service interface, and there are two clients. One client is the authoring environment, and another one is the website. So in terms of VADs, those are the four major areas that you're looking at. And there's a bevy of standards underneath it, which makes us compatible with there's a lexical fin model out in the community. So as some of you in the programs and out in the states and the jurisdictions and the territories, most likely we get a request of programs and state and other partners that deal not only with CDC, but with EPA, with VA, with potentially NCI and other federal agencies. So some of the models that we're gonna look at actually interoperate at that level with some of the data streams. In terms of some of the data enhancements, we will allow, we're gonna support better alternate concept designators, relationships of concepts, inclusion of code systems, and there is another major one, which is the versioning of the vocabulary objects down to the value set and the concepts within the value set, which currently the versioning is not really supported down the object graph. And I'll turn it over to Mona Ayers, who's going to talk about the data model.
Good morning. Just wanted to get a round of hands of who here has worked with data models before. So a lot of you. So this should speed through and we should be pretty quickly. Also, how many people are currently using the current FinVADs? Okay, not quite as many hands there. So let's see, how do I move the mouse? I'm gonna do it one thing. Okay. Quickly, I wanted to go over what I'm going to go through today. The first thing is, what is the data model? What the current new data model is built on standards. The benefits of the new FinVADs data model. A quick overview of the model structure and how the data fits into the model. And before I get started, I just wanted to say one thing. I wanted to say thank you to Christy Eckerson, who helped me with this presentation some. And I am currently taking over as the data modeler for FinVADs. So some of you came here today to see Christy speak because I think I'm still in the program. So go ahead. Iyer. Okay. Data model has many formal definitions, formal definition of the different elements required to describe those aspects of the real world which it is designed to model and the nature of the links between these elements. Another way of saying that is we're going to define the entities of the objects and the relationships within those objects. We're also going to discuss some of the attributes within those objects. A working definition is a structured and comprehensible representation of the information used in a purposeful enterprise and the organization of that information. So the model is organizing the information into the objects and then has the relationship between those. The new FinVADs data model is based on standards. It's influenced by the ISO 11179. We now have a data dictionary. We have consistent attribute naming conventions. They're defined. All entities are uniquely identified with an identifier. We also were influenced by the CHI standards. You'll see the model closely relates to the Common Terminology Standard, or CS2, CTS2, and then, of course, the HL7 standards. The new benefits of the data model that GB briefly mentioned are the new version control for vocabulary. So we now version value sets. We also version views of those value sets. We have a more consistent representation of the data across the code systems. So each code system will fit into the model, and we've tried to represent all of the data for all of the code systems that we're aware of at this moment so that the data model can grow and house that information. It supports the stability of the VADS product over time and allows for services, other applications to access the database and the data model through these services. It improves the consistency of the information. We should see improvement in the performance, and we can have database scalability now. We have room to grow. This is just a quick overview of the information model, and kind of what I'm going to do is break this down into subsets and walk through it and try to show you where we are housing the vocabulary, and just a quick high-level simple example that you can take away. Go ahead. So what is a code system? We're going to start at the left side of the model, and a code system, which I'm sure you all know, is a specific published release of a terminology, thesaurus, vocabulary, nomenclature, or classification that uses codes for designating concepts. So examples, ICD-9, LOINC, SNOMED, HL7. And then the code system concepts that fall under that are a unit of thought. It's based on a code system and based on common properties within that code system. So this is kind of what our code system and concepts data model looks like at a high level. On the left, you have the code systems, which we just discussed briefly. An example of that would be the county or SNOMED. So, for example, if we have county as a code system, then we have the county concepts to the right, with the code system concepts. So all of our different counties, Fulton, Gwinnett, et cetera. Below there, you'll see the code system property references. What that gives us the ability to do is define additional attributes for a code system that we might not have defined initially. For example, county, when you define a county for the Phipps County code system, you have a state associated with that county. So this gives us a place to say that we're going to have a state attribute for each concept within code system. Another example is, I'm trying to think of other examples. We'll stay there. So then we have the code system concept, and if you go down to the lower left corner of the model, the concept property, there for Fulton County, it would say Georgia. That would be where the actual data is housed. Then to the right of that, we have the concept relationships. So for SNOMED, for example, if we have a concept of diabetes mellitus, the concept relationship below there would be diabetes mellitus type 1 and type 2. So those are the ways that we're going to house the right relationships at the current time. The one thing we're not doing is we're only going to have intra-code relationships at this time with the VADS 3.0 release. So we will only have SNOMED to SNOMED or LOINC to LOINC. We will not go outside of those coding systems at this time. Then to the right, we have the alternate designations. So again, for diabetes, we could have alternate designations of diabetes mellitus or DM. Other designations, not necessarily synonyms, it could be a definition, it could be a code, it could be an alpha code. And then to the top, we're allowing for pre-coordinated concept detail in that relationship. So for example, if you have a vaccination site and the three concepts within that are left, upper, and arm, you can pre-coordinate that to left, upper, arm as one concept. And that shows the relationship between those three concepts. Okay. Does anybody have any questions about that, or is that a good explanation? So then we're going to go into value sets, and a value set can be defined in multiple ways. It can be defined as all of the concepts for a coding system. So for example, you could take all of the concepts and directly relate those to a value set. You could take a subset, so for the example of SNOMED, when you have many, many concepts, and you want to break that down to a specific area, you could only take those concepts for your value set. Or a value set can come from multiple coding systems by attaching multiple value sets to that code, to that multiple value sets within the value set. So a value set can take code concepts from multiple places that you've already created. And again, we said that value sets can now be versioned. So, and what constitutes a version? Any change. If you change a coding system concept, if you change a value set definition, or if you add an additional value set concept or take one away, then it will constitute a new version. But you can always download a different version. You don't have to necessarily point your application to a current upgraded version of a value set. And then one other thing back there, sorry, one other thing. On the value set concepts, they are a pointer to the code system concept. They don't necessarily take all the properties of the attributes, but we do allow you in a value set concept to create your own definition. So if you're using the concept for your own purpose and you do not like the SDO's definition, so one of the applications, the countermeasure response and administration, could define that definition to be just a little different. Especially on a message guide that you're using or something to that effect. Okay, and then we group the value sets in two ways. We group them conceptually or functionally. The conceptual grouping is by possibly a subject area, which is demographics, where we attach the code concepts from state, county, race, ethnicity, things like that can be associated there. Also by domain. And then we also have the functional views, which are by application area, and that's the HL7 messaging guides. And so, for example, we have BioSense, and we attach Phipps County, microorganisms, and specimen value sets. And this is a look at our vocabulary group model. A vocabulary group can be associated to code systems or value sets. So you can link the code systems that you want to participate in a group, and then you can also associate value sets to the group. And it's the value set that's associated, not the version. Okay, and then we have vocabulary views, which are versioned. So you would associate a value set version to the view, and you can version your views as well. Okay, we have a new change event model, and what this does is it allows us to, it allows the support of vocabulary changes. So you can lock the vocabulary now. Our vocabularist, he'll be using these, you know, if we have multiple, they'll be using these tools, and eventually maybe it can be a distributed environment. You can make changes to the vocabulary. We can batch those changes. The UAF will allow him the capability to review and update those changes. Then once they've been approved through the governance process, then he can publish those changes out, which will create new versions. And then it also keeps a historical record of the changes in the new data model. So if an application is only concerned with a specific set of changes and they don't want to download the entire model, then they can use this tool to upgrade their application with just those specific pieces. And it has a whole, it's auditing process now. So we have the audit model that documents all of the changes that have taken place. So in summary, basically we just talked about how the new model is built on standards. The new model benefits include versioning of the data, consistency of the data, and scalability. We kind of walked through the model and how the data would fit into the model, and then the new change event process. Okay, a vocabulary group is conceptual. So it would be, a group is like a domain. It is the demographic domain or the demographic group. So you would attach all the code systems that are associated with demographics. So you could associate county, you know, the Phipps State, the Phipps County, anything that would be associated with demographics. Does that answer your, it is kind of a domain.
Thank you.
they can be based on chi. So, I mean, they can be similar.
Very closely related. There's a, Sundar can speak to the specifics of where they deviate, but they're not quite identical, but they're very close.
I think you are coming from a theme, Paul. So if you ask, okay, it's vocabulary group, we have a high-level grouping of 13 groups. That's what we are based upon, indexing it, way of indexing the values, like domain, like demographics, and lab, and medication-related, all the vocabulary subsets. I think they're essentially they're kind of the same.
I'm not sure I understood this correctly, but I thought I heard you say that you can take, you can create localized definitions for concepts if you don't like the definition.
Well, for a value set concept, what they can do for the messaging guides, that we can create a new definition. We've had the problem, and Margaret could probably speak a little clearer to that, but we've had the problem with a messaging guide where they do not want the SDO defined concept description or definition. And so we allow that to be different.
And how does one assure semantic interoperability of localized definitions of concepts are allowed?
It's
really the definitions are the same. It's just that they may be reworded slightly different. The definition, the concept's the same.
The concept code is the same.
It's a
Yes, it's a label.
It's an ultimate, it's not a definition, it's a description.
Yeah.
We call it a local description.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not, the code is the same, the relationships are the same, but we do allow a little flexibility there. Any other questions? Well, thank you for your time.
To the presentation. Can you hear me?
No.
All right.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Welcome to the presentation on enterprise web services as it applies to the Finn vocabulary and distributions system. My name is Vaidyanath Iyer. I am a contractor for the CDC through Onto Reason LLC. As a part of this presentation, I'll be providing a brief insight into the background and business need for a web service solution, followed by an overview of web services and the identification of some of the consumers for the web services that we are creating. Also, we'll take a brief look at the service architecture from a high level and focus on a couple of representative areas which we are working on, which is vocabulary service and security service. And then moving on, we'll talk a little more about the technology specifics and a future direction for the web services. Now, the goals for developing web services. The objectives were to enable consistent and accurate representation of information by encouraging and adopting the supporting the use of vocabulary standards. Also, there was a desire, as GB pointed out, to minimize the costs associated with building building new applications. So the other reason was to basically for improved maintainability and adaptability and setting up the foundations for a collaborative framework amongst public health partners. The business need landscape in public health and healthcare services is rapidly changing, as we all know. The web services provides, the advantage which web services provides is it's a component-based approach where you can actually phase in functionality on an as-needed basis and can be accessed via a wide variety of technological platforms. There are constant demands on information technology groups to deliver more with less, but at the same time, there is a demand to provide better quality of data amongst programs, better a better range of services for different programs, and real-time access to data and services. Public health partners also want to have a meaningful exchange of information while having ready access to evolving standards. Now, what is web services? Web services and SOA are not products. They basically are, it's basically a solution that bridges the gap between information technology and business needs, which is always driven by business processes or business needs. The solutions are implemented via a set of design software design patterns and principles, and they are not tailored for one particular application, but are designed to serve a broad range of consumers. Furthermore, they need to be flexible enough to accommodate change within the constraints of budget. Although web services and SOA, service-oriented architecture, have been around for a while, it's only recently that they are picking up momentum. And per Gartner research, 60% of enterprises in 2008 are going to be adopting service-oriented architecture and web services as their guiding principle for mission-critical applications. Now let's, who are going to be the service consumers for the web services that we are building? Primarily, the consumers are going to be the FinWADS, Vocabulary Access and Distribution System, web user interface, which my colleague Robert Dodge here is going to be talking about a little later. And the other application that we are building is the Universal Authoring Framework, which is going to be used by vocabularists to edit code systems, value sets, et cetera, which is, I'll be talking about the Universal Authoring Framework after this presentation. Some of the future consumers for the services include CDC programs, applications such as Lab Response Network, National Health and Safety Network, Message Subscription Service, and could also include state and local public health departments. Now, the picture here represents a high-level view of the underlying architecture. The top layer is the presentation layer, which is basically the web interface application, as well as the Universal Authoring Framework. The next layer is the business transformation layer, or the business layer, where the objects, business objects, are transformed to basically pass it on to the web interface. Now, this transformation layer could also include session management, for example. It could include caching of system reference tables or system reference information to be served to the front end. The next layer is the service layer, which is what we are working on, which includes a bunch of service calls, which are very straightforward calls. They like getting code systems, get value sets, get me the authorities, get me the vocabulary sources, etc. And the next layer below that is the component layer, which is basically the domain objects, or the like value sets, code systems, which get populated by calling the stored procedures or scripts or views and in the data layer. And these domain objects get populated and get passed on to the service layer, which does its transformation, passes it on to the business layer, and then the business layer does its work, passes it on to the UI, and finally gets rendered in the application. So the next diagram here, next picture here, represents another view of the architecture. It's called the functional division view. And on the left-hand side is the database, basically all the procedures that are, all the views or the scripts that are associated with the database. And the second layer, second column is the service layer. And the third one is the UAF, which is the Universal Authoring Framework, the utility, and the web application on the right-hand side. Now, as you can see, that there is an overlap between what some of the calls that the UAF is going to apply, like getting code systems and getting value sets for browsing. And there's going to be some calls which the UAF uses, like for managing version control or change management, which is not going to be available or accessible for the web application. The web application is primarily interested in retrieving code systems and value sets, searching for concepts, searching for code systems, or searching for text within within the code systems, concepts, etc. The service API can be broadly classified, the service API that we are working on currently can be classified broadly into two areas. One is for the vocabulary services, and the other is for security controller services. The vocabulary services that we are working on is basically for the domain objects that need to be populated that I mentioned. Now, this is a sampling of the vocabulary service API that we are working on, as I mentioned, which contains simple calls like find authorities, find code system concepts, find views, find find value set concepts, get code system concepts, etc. The vocabulary service API can be loosely classified into basically three broad groups. One is the sample, one is the control APIs, the other one is search APIs, and the third one is the browse APIs. Control APIs would be getting all assigning authorities, getting all distribution sources, which is what the application needs to, as associated objects, to work with. And then sample search APIs, basically searching for value set concepts, et cetera. Then value set browsing APIs, like which would be just used for get me all the value sets, or get me the value set concepts associated with a value set, and similarly with code systems. All right. The security service that we are implementing is a single sign-on service. We are implementing it using a standard called Java Authentication and Authorization Service, or JAS. And the current implementation that we are using for authentication mechanism is the Kerberos authentication mechanism, which can be easily swapped out by any authentication mechanism that the end user or the consuming application wants to use. The design is basically abstracts the underlying authentication mechanism, and it enables platform independence and forward compatibility. So if a version of Kerberos changes, if a newer version comes into the picture, then there's going to be no new coding or no new development. All you have to do is just swap the underlying layer and modify a configuration parameter within a file, and you'll be set. Right now, the primary client for the security service is the Universal Authoring Framework, which I'll be talking about. And as the mission expands, we can add more functionality to it, like authorization information, and can be accessible to other clients. This is another view of the security service. This is actually a component view of the security service. As you can see, that there is a login context, which basically gets the user information, username and password, and passes it to the Kerberos Key Distribution Center, or the KDC, which returns, if it's authenticated successfully, it'll return a subject which is populated with the credentials, which is what is going to be used throughout the application. That's it. Moving on to the technology specifics of the implementation. We are using, for the SOA, for the service backplane, we are using WebLogic version 10.3 as the application server of choice here at CDC. We are not restricted to WebLogic, WebLogic. We can use other J2E application servers since it is a Java-based environment. And we use JEE5 and SDK as the SDK, or the software development kit, and JDK, the Java development kit version, is 6.0. For the data integration piece, we are using an open source data mapper framework called IBATIS. And the reason why we're using it is because of its simplicity, because of the several advantages that it provides, the advantages being simplicity. It basically couples programming objects, like Java and .NET objects, to the underlying SQL or stored procedures, and lets you pass information back and forth very easily. The other advantages include information hiding. It abstracts the implementation level details of the database from the calling programs. It enables portability, where you can actually swap the underlying database. If it's SQL Server, you can swap it with Oracle, and all you have to do is refresh the SQL map file, and you'll be good to go. Also, it provides cross-platform integration. I think you moved to the next slide, John. Sorry, previous one is. It provides cross-platform integration, where it can integrate with both Java and .NET, although we are not dealing with .NET right now, but it just provides that functionality, that feature. Also, it allows for transaction management flexibility, where users can provide their own connection pooling logic and transaction management logic, or can leverage the application server transaction management and application server connection pooling. So future directions for this web services will be to allow automated publish-subscribe facility for these services and make the services accessible via the internet. That is all for this presentation on enterprise web services. I'll be presenting the next next presentation as well, which is the Universal Authoring Framework. And maybe we can save the questions till after I finish this presentation, unless people have any questions which they want to ask me right now. Yes. Uh-huh.
Does that mean outside of the SDN? What do you mean by that?
It could be. Right now, as GB mentioned, we are focusing, within the CDC kind of environment. Maybe it is accessible via the internet, but through VPN or whatever for CDC based applications. I'll let GB talk about that.
Just to clarify,
secure web services outside of the CDC firewall is getting looked at through the SDN architecture. We have a pilot using the CA architecture to secure web services external to the firewall. The UAF, which Ira is about to show you, has a governance built in, so we needed authentication. So that portion of it will be, excuse me, within the CDC firewall. However, there's other services which are unsecure, which will be accessible to anybody on the internet. So there's a subset of services that are secured, which is within the firewall. The rest of the services will be unsecured, and they'll be available to anyone outside also. Sure, the question was, what is the subset of services that are secure and unsecure? We're working through some of those details, and it's probably getting worked through right now. Basically, the UAF, which I was about to show you, the subset of services that are unique to the authoring environment are candidates for security, and others that are more data retrieval, such as searching and downloading, are candidates for unsecurity. Yes.
So, is a part of security at this point to identify users so that you have the authorization to do authoring, or is it to also secure value sets?
Right. It's the former at this point. Yes.
Are you going to look into security for value sets? Because I think there are some value sets that have varying levels of security regarding who is allowed to access them.
Do you want to answer that?
It's been looked into, and the decision was made at the meeting to focus on delivery of value sets that everybody can access, because the website is one of the external parts anyhow. Definitely that concern is well known, and I think it will be addressed going forward. So I definitely stay tuned for the update on that going forward. So Chris, I think you have probably a thought on that.
There are hooks within the database to allow securing a particular use. For only a certain set of eyes can be placed in that view, that is then very restricted authorization, so that only authorized users can get to that particular view.
Any other questions?
Moving on to the next presentation, which is talking about the Universal Authoring Framework, which is a utility which will let people, vocabularists, actually author information, change, modify value sets, add new value sets, etc. So I'll be talking about in this presentation, giving you a brief background on UAF, provide some idea about the enterprise architecture overview, functionality overview, and the technology overview. The background, the focus, as GB mentioned in his introductory speech for NICFIDIASS, has been to promote semantic interoperability amongst public health systems, and provide implementation, and as an added feature, to provide implementation functionality using web services as an approach. With this objective in view, there was also a strong desire to streamline the management and development of vocabularies. So what is the need for the UAF? The crux of the mission to actually promote interoperability is to manage and maintain data. Current means of downloading vocabularies, as GB mentioned, is to go to the SDO websites and download the Excel spreadsheets or comma-separated files and massage the data, and then call scripts to actually update the information to the backend. The problems with this approach, or the challenges with this approach, are obvious. It's time-consuming, it's labor-intensive, it's error-prone. Secondly, there is no governance process which is built into the process to actually make sure that the content that goes in is relevant. And the solution also does not facilitate or does not easily facilitate the ability to distribute the data sets to end users who can then customize that information for their purposes. Part of the reason being that there is a lot of interdependence amongst the data objects, which is fairly complex and needs a utility or a tool which can manage all the interdependencies. Hence the need for the authoring tool, which is called as the Universal Authoring Framework. And some of the architectural goals for the project was to provide a framework for an integrated editing environment and to provide a plug-in kind of interface to for adding functionality to the system and to maintain focus, obviously, on interoperability as mandated by several federal initiatives. Now, this picture is a high-level view of the enterprise architecture for the Finn vocabulary and distribution system. I don't know whether you can see it very clearly, but on the top left is where the UAF actually fits in, which has got a bunch of plugins like governance plugin and vocabulary plugin, which is what we call it as functionality. These are components that get added, and question plugin, form plugins, message definition plugins, etc. These actually access the service calls on the right-hand side, which is what I talked about in my previous presentation, which was the web services. So these plugins invoke the web service calls, which access the data from the database and perform all the manipulations that are required. What were the data authoring requirements for NICFeed EISs? Currently, the CDC is responsible for coordinating the flow of information between various public health partners. The effort includes defining vocabulary components and create messaging, message implementation guides, etc. As a part of this coordination, there have been requests for better definition of forms, questions, ontologies, and relationships between the data, etc. So the current focus areas for us from an editing perspective is the vocabulary objects, which is basically code systems and value sets, etc., and message definitions. Some of the future focus areas would be defining forms, questions, ontologies through the UAF. All right. As I mentioned earlier, all the data is integrated. Messages utilize vocabulary data and question definitions. Ontologies use vocabularies, messages, and questions. And also there is a need need for an ability to track versions of various vocabulary objects. The UAF provides a consolidated view for editing this data. It provides an integrated view of editing this data because there's a desire to edit data elements within the context of other data elements. And also there's a need to support governance for change control. Now, the UAF is a framework which is, as I mentioned, for building an integrated editing environment. It is based on the Eclipse rich client platform. I don't know how many people have heard of Eclipse as an IDE. Fantastic. All right. So it's based on the Eclipse rich client platform, and it's implemented by the use Eclipse by its very nature facilitates addition of functionality using plugins. So the implementation of new functionality, as we see it, would be as plugins. Now, why utilize Eclipse RCP or the Eclipse rich client platform? Eclipse is an open source integrated development environment, which is extremely popular amongst Java developers. The advantages of the Eclipse platform is, out of the box, it provides standard set of plugins, like help functionality or update control functionality, functionality to process XML messages, functionality to check in, check out code, which is, again, very developer specific, ability to search for text within the particular source code. So Eclipse RCP leverages this built-in functionality for Eclipse, and in addition to providing this out-of-box functionality, the environment provides enough flexibility for fine-grained control of UI elements and the business actions that the application developer is intending to perform. So in a nutshell, the Eclipse RCP platform lets developers build rich UI applications very quickly, which will work on multiple platforms and are inherently flexible by nature. And the end users of applications also appreciate the high quality of the user interface that the RCP manages to provide. The development for UAF, once again, since we are going to add it in as plugins, it's going to be in a phased approach. The initial phase is going to be vocabulary editing and security integration that I talked about. And future phases include ontology editing, message definition, adding of questions and forms. The UAF vocabulary editor is the first plugin that that we are working on, and it provides basic editing functionality for value sets, code systems, etc. Creating value sets and code systems. All right, go ahead. The key functionality that we are providing through UAF is version control or change management, change processing, as Mona talked about in her presentation. The way we are working on edits is it creates edits as a difference between prior version and proposed version. These edits are saved as intermediate XML files, which get persisted into intermediate tables. And once the vocabularists are satisfied with the changes that they have made, a governance review committee, you know, runs a report, looks at these changes, decides what needs to be published to the enterprise database, and that's how we manage version control here. Next, the additional features for UAF is basically we're going to add functionality to import data sets directly into the database using simple spreadsheets as of now, and then as the system evolves, we can add more complicated download functionalities or upload functionalities, whatever you want to call it. Now, I talked about the Eclipse RCP platform. This screen snapshot is the general layout for the UAF for the Universal Authoring Framework, and we like to call it the vocabulary perspective, since perspective is what is used in the IDE world. To the top left, you can see the code systems and value sets. That's the list of code systems and value sets will be displayed in the browse area. You can double click on any of the code systems, for example, and in the edit area, you will see details of that particular object. You can go and work on updating that particular object. And at the bottom of the object, you will see associated objects for that particular object that you're working on. And this provides an integrated view of the system. This next screen snapshot gives you a little more detail on what I talked about. So when you click on code system, you get details for that particular code system. And importantly, you can see at the bottom there are tabs like it says, okay, core data, and what are the assigning authorities for this particular code system? What is group membership? What are the extended properties? What are the concepts, et cetera? So you can have a consolidated view of the system and make modifications to the data and associated data components. This screen snapshot basically displays how the change review process is going to work. The governance committee is going to run a report, and you know it'll populate a list of changes that have been requested but not yet published in the system. So they can actually go through each one of those individual elements and decide whether they want to publish the information to the database or they want to cancel it. And this UI provides that particular aspect of the functionality. That's about it for my presentation. Thank you for your patience. If you have any questions, I'll be. Thanks. Go ahead. Right now we don't have plans for. Well, the some of the components that we are using, if end users or if other of our partners choose to use .NET, they can still access the services and perhaps use those objects. Since the underlying components, you know, we use IBATs, which can be swapped that back and forth. But then there is going to be some amount of work that needs to be done to support that, support .NET from the service perspective. Right. Right.
Yeah, we're actually using SOAP and actually HashiCorp, right?
Yes.
It's an optimization, so the service actually can be accessed by
.NET as well. Mm-hmm. So it's
by
multi-platform, and it will be from the start.
That's right. Yeah, the service itself is a SOAP and also Hessian compliant. So your clients, which could be .NET, Java, C++, would go through the service protocols to access it. So it can be accessed by .NET applications through the service interface.
Okay. So
what was not .NET compliant you're trying to say?
The core application is Java.
This is a Java-based application.
Now, the access to the core application is the service interface. And the service interface, again, is SOAP, but we're actually using a Hessian for a packet optimization. So any client can go through the service interface to access the core VAS application.
And the UAF itself, I'm sorry, the UAF, the Universal Authoring Framework itself, is a Java-based application. So that cannot be ported to a .NET environment. Right.
So if your services or AWS is following up the AWS specification.
Right.
Is it following? Or
yes, it is. It is. Yeah, that's what GB mentioned. You would be able to consume it from, yeah. Yes, sir. You had a question.
No, I was just wondering about the intermediate XML. Is that based on an existing specification or is that something that's been developed internally?
This was developed internally.
Well,
actually, let GB talk about that. Sorry.
Mona spoke about it's not a standard, but it's the work done with the Lex Grid project with Mayo Clinic, and that change event model, there was some interest, and actually Tim Morris is sitting in the back, there was some interest about a year or two back to take the change event model through other agencies. So if that goes through a format, let's say through a standards organization like an HL7, it can be de facto standard, but it's actually the change event model, the core of it, is used in other lexical models such as NCI uses in their Lex Grid models. That XML is based on the change event model. Which actually is consistent with a CTS2 implementation. That actual common terminology service interface through HL7, the data model within the interface is the change event model. So it's actually compatible with that. The reason we went there is simply if other systems want to create their own vocabulary implementation, they don't want to use any of this, but you simply like the change event model, that's another way for us to interoperate with the data.
That was the basis of my question.
Did I answer it? Okay, that was the reason behind that.
Okay, are you able to hear me? Let me put this up a little further.
That's better.
Is that a good volume? Anyway, hello, my name is Robert Dodge, and I am a contractor for the CDC through SAIC. And the final part of this presentation is going to focus on the user experience and some of the things that went into, refactoring the new website and making that as usable as possible. So anyway, the advent of this VADS 3.0 project gave us kind of an opportunity to revisit some of the decisions that we had made in the past and kind of assess what we were doing right and kind of what we liked and maybe what we could do to improve it. And what we realized is that the underlying technology was changing and we wanted to change with it, but our core mission has always stayed the same, which is we're basically a distributor of FIN value sets to our end users, and that feature is currently supported via the Express download, and that probably comprises 80% of what we do. But then there's a secondary mission that we have, which is to kind of provide decision support for health professionals that are looking to maybe author their own value sets, maybe try to find an existing value set that matches what they need. And so the features of search and browse, as well as object detail, which lets them look at, the metadata that basically goes along with an object, and so on and so forth, as well as the ability to do custom downloads. Those features are very important, and we wanted to focus on making sure the user experience there was as complete as possible. So, in any case, let me just go over really briefly some of the history just in the last couple of years. And that is, it's important, our current application is based on the VADS 2.x platform, and that was released in 2005 with updates to the front end, which we call the browser, made in 2006, 2007, and then into 2008. And our current version is 2.4.1, and that's available today at the link that you see below. And the 2.x platform consists of the browser, as well as an embeddable Java API and library that accesses a database, a content repository, and I'll talk a little bit about that, where it's relevant in terms of the changes that we have planned. But late 2008, we're planning to release VADS 3.0, and just to kind of set the stage, I wanted to sorry, did you hear that interference? Is that bothering people? Okay, let me put it on my tie here.
Flip it,
like that. Very good. Okay, let's try this again. anyway, I thought it was important to show you the VADS 2.x homepage. You can pretty much see the features that we really depend on are right there in the front. Over in the left-hand column is the Express Download feature, and that's in one of the menus on the left-hand side. If you click on that, it'll take you to a page that gives you predefined, pre-calculated value sets that, assuming that you know the program you're interested in, you can just click on it and you can pretty much download it right there and you're done. The rest of this is intended for those of you who want to maybe, you know, search a value set, search a code system, you know, for a particular keyword, and that's what you can see here on the front page. As you can see, code system search and value set search are separated. All of those are examples of basic search. And basic search attempts to look at the database, and it searches two very specific columns in the database called the code, which you guys are familiar with, concept codes, you know, value set codes, et cetera, and also the name field, the identifying label. And if you need anything more, you can go to the advanced search page, which brings up a more detailed set of search options. In any case, so let's say I type in HL7 in that search box and I hit the search button, what I'll get is essentially everything in the system that basically matches that search. And so this would be, let's say, the first page of several. And as you can see, we've got pagination here. And we've also got the codes here. This left-hand column is actually the code column. And that's hyperlinked, so that if you click on that, it takes you to the object detail page. And pretty much you can keep drilling through the system. Anything that you see that's hyperlinked, you can click on it, and it'll take you to the applicable object detail page for that item. One thing you don't see here expanded is this link up here, the view where it says view metadata for that object. But if you click on that, it'll show you a tabular view of the metadata that's appropriate to that object. In addition, you've got download buttons here. If you click that checkbox, that'll actually in turn render a set of checkboxes in the left-hand column, which is not shown here, and you can individually check those boxes and download those concepts. And this slide is just for your takeaway, for your reference, because it was important to point out what the features are that are currently supported. Obviously, the Express Download is at the bottom, and these other features are there to support decision support and searching and so forth. Anyway, one of our tasks was to try to think about, you know, what would be a good way to, you know, try to improve our UI. And we got to thinking, and the question came up, you know, what is a good UI? And although it's going to depend on the kind of application that you're building, and obviously it's going to depend on the anticipated user expertise level, what we pretty much knew is that our site had to be functional. And that is, if you're supporting downloads, you know, the downloads have to work 100% of the time. And it had to be usable, which meant that we need good visual metaphors, good visual cues. The site needs to be clear so that, for instance, a simple task looks simple, it's simple to do, it returns results acceptably, and that it also needs to be responsive. And so we wanted to minimize the round trip time that it would take for a particular task that maybe wasn't optimal. One other point here, too, is that there are some more complicated tasks that are available, and there are also simple tasks. And one thing we wanted to make sure of is that the tasks that were easy looked easy, they were predictable, and maybe the ones that are a little more complicated were maybe appropriately, you know, put in context, If there was a search that was going to take 5 or 10 minutes rather than 5 or 10 seconds, you know, that we would at least alert the user that that might be the case. So let me just tab through here. What I want to show you next is a mock-up of the 3.0 user interface, which we'll see here. And this is what you would see if you hit the new website according to what we're currently projecting. And as you can see, we still have a left-hand column, but as we'll see in a moment, it's a collapsible column that the user has control over. And you can see Express Downloads on the menu there too. But across the top, what you see are each of the object types that the new VADS is going to support searches on. And the default is the most, you know, the most used, the most referenced object type in the system, which is Value Set Concepts. But you can go all the way over to the right, and you can even do a search on a Vim vocabulary view if there's some metadata, you know, that you may be trying to search through to find a particular term. You can do that here. They're not readable. Let me see if I can zoom in on this. Does this have a zoom feature? Well, across, I can kind of just tell you across the top is value set concepts, value sets, code system concepts, code systems, fin vocabulary groups, and fin vocabulary views. Those are our basic six objects that we support. And when you click on, those are basically link buttons across the top. So when you click on the one that you want, it highlights, and the context then changes. So whatever you're typing in the search box will basically go against that object type. And that yellow button there, that's probably familiar to some of you who are familiar with the Yahoo search engine. One of our goals was to try to borrow as many applicable metaphors as we could from the industry standard search engines, but also try to keep this focused around, you know, some of the things that make our search process unique, such as searching against a database. But anyway, what I'm going to show you here is one of the big changes is that the search, the basic search types have been collapsed. They've been combined into one. So instead of a basic and an advanced search page, which are separate, this is the basic search. But if you expand, if you click on View Search Options, which is that link just below the box, what you end up with is a set of search options that you can then specify what you want. And you see kind of a lot going on in here. Keep in mind that this is particular to value set concepts, which are the most derivative object type in the system. So there are a lot of options to search among. For some of these other object types, this is a little simpler. But at the, what you see here are, for instance, some filters. The basic search searches across the fin shared vocabulary, which is that first internal checkbox that's checked there. But if you wanted to search against BioSense or NHSM, you can come in here and check those boxes and search against those. Whereas in the current application, there's a little bit of a convoluted process to trying to set the view that you're in. You can do it, but here we have everything exposed to the user. They just go in and they click and they continue. You can also turn off the filter, which basically opens up the search to everything that's in the system. So for instance, if you were to expand the vocabulary group box there, oh, and by the way, these are expandos. So if you don't want to see that, you click on that chevron on the top right of the bar there and it'll collapse. And then you can expand one of the others and work within that. So, but in any case, the vocabulary group we talked about earlier, those would list the vocabulary groups that are available. But if you didn't want to search on any groups, you could uncheck that box and it would deselect the search. Over on the right-hand side, I just wanted to point out we have our search type, which currently we support an exact match and it contains. And probably by the time this goes live, there will be something additional there as well. In this case, we're also exposing the version concept, the version, so that you can search as of a specific date, or you can simply say, give me the latest version. And just to let you know, some of these columns here probably are not applicable to this specific search. But in principle, we'll list the search fields that are applicable to that particular object type, such as code and name. And as you see, they're checked. When the user first comes in here from a basic search, those are checked by default because that's the basic search. But then they can simply change that and they can keep going. So, and if they need to reset the search options, they can do that as well. So, but anyway, this look and feel is a little more in line with what the CDC is moving toward. Which you saw a minute ago, that was probably the old style. Anyway, when you click the search button, what happens is that search pane doesn't go away, it just gets hidden, it gets collapsed. And you can also see, if you look on the left-hand column, that menu can be expanded. So right there, by clicking on the by clicking where that mouse pointer is, you can expand that. In any case, you see very similar content as you would see in the old style, but you've got the checkboxes there, you've got pagination controls, and so on and so forth. And basically, clicking on one of these would take you into an object detail page, which we don't have to show you today, but it's going to look very similar to list look and feel, and it's going to show you pretty much everything. It's going to make everything accessible there kind of at a glance. Let me take you also to here. These are some of the features that we think we've got online to introduce in VADS 3.0. A new look and feel. We think the search feature is improved. We think the navigation and the download have been simplified somewhat so that just with a couple of mouse clicks, you'll be able to get what you need. But it also supports some of the complicated features that people are sometimes looking for. And we definitely want to support that. But let me go on to the next slide here. I just wanted to address a point. We definitely wanted to leverage some of the work that's been done in the last few years. Some websites that we're all familiar with, like Google and Yahoo, they've kind of expanded the way that their websites work. You can search across multiple different object types now. It's not only web pages, but you can search images. You can search that type of thing. So some of that was borrowed here, but there are some differences that are unique to what we do, specifically that we're searching within a database, and our object types are all interrelated. You can click on a code system, foreign key, if you will, and it'll take you to the code system object itself, and so on and so forth. And those relationships are important to maintain, and they do have an impact on the searching process. So the object types also, those are very specific, and we wanted to keep that. In any case, there's also been an update to the download. We're probably going to support a tab delimited text file as our default. And the good news here is that we're going to commit to returning proper Unicode text, so that value sets that are based off of some foreign characters and so forth, they should come through fine. And we'll have a template or a set of Excel templates that you'll be able to use to import those text files into Excel, and the content should render appropriately. There's also, let me go on to the next slide. Just a word about the architecture. One of the biggest changes in the front end is that we're moving forward to kind of new standards. As most of you are aware, the existing VADS framework uses custom Java classes, custom frameworks, and it interacts with the Java library that's in process. It doesn't make an external call. That's, of course, changing now that we have the VADS vocabulary service. We actually make an out-of-process call to, not an out-of-process call, but it depends on how the web server is configured. It can be out-of-process. And we're not relying on tight coupling and tight integration with those objects. Just another thing, too, the Struts2 MVC framework is what we're using, and our page content, so kind of our authoring that we do on the front end to render the pages and so forth, that's also standards compliant. We're using JSP there. We're also using Spring as an object management framework in the application layer. And we're also able to use some really neat technologies like jQuery, which really help us with some of the dynamic page presentation and some of the dynamic page updates that we're supporting. But in any case, this is just a summary of some of the benefits that we have. As you can see, screen layout, dynamic page updates, and so forth, which I've talked about. But let me just take a minute here and move on just to a slightly different topic, and that is kind of how it's been to integrate with the VADS vocabulary service. And I just wanted to say a couple things about that. It's actually been a lot of fun. Some things are obviously more challenging now, because instead of having the VADS framework, managing our memory and managing our objects, we're doing that now. So instead of, the VADS 2.x actually manages the interaction with the database to the point that you'd simply make an in-process call. You say, give me this object, give me that object, and a lot of times it's already cached. There's no call to the database. In our case, if we call the web service, we're guaranteed that we're making a call to the, we're guaranteed that we're making a call to the service. So if we want to kind of work on kind of performance related issues, if we want to actually, guarantee performance in a certain case, it might be to our benefit to cache certain objects ourselves. And that's actually what we're doing. Another attribute of the service interface is that the objects that it returns are not inherently built as an object graph. For web services, it's sometimes a dangerous thing to do. So we're steering clear of that. We're returning simple objects, and the links between them are ID references and so forth. So if we want to build that object graph, we've got to do it on our side. And we do that through our own proxy object model. It's not very complicated. It models the relationships, and it wraps the DTOs, the data transfer objects that we get back from the service. One other thing too, because of that, we had some judgments to make about whether we wanted to have chunkier calls. In other words, make a smaller set of calls that return a lot of data at a time, which means then we have to store that. We have to provide for that, and that may impact our memory usage. Versus kind of going a different way and going more toward a chattier protocol, which is the idea of sending a lot of fine-grained calls to the web service, which in a way reduces kind of the memory overhead of each call, but it adds a lot. It adds I/O bandwidth. So we kind of met in the middle, and one of the things. So our calls pretty much. Kind of meet in the middle, and what we definitely rely on is the ability to cache things like our views, just the view metadata. There are only a limited number of those, so it doesn't take a lot of effort to retrieve those. It doesn't take a lot of memory to store those. And things like concepts, objects like concepts is a very different thing. There are so many of those that we're not planning to just cache those indefinitely. Although there are certainly different options that you have in terms of, a least used, most recently used cache, that type of thing. Right now, we're just focused on basic functionality, and so we have a long-lived cache of the objects that are few and far between, but improve the search performance. Another thing, just to point out to you, I know we were talking earlier in the session about trying to interact with the web service using. A different language other than Java. I definitely think it was easier for us to use Java because the object definitions were already created, so we could just reuse those. And I don't think we have plans right now to publish, to go ahead and publish a .NET or a C++ version of some of those objects. But so you might have to do that work yourself. But since everything is standards compliant, it's certainly possible to do, and it should be interoperable. In fact, it will be interoperable. So. Anyway, that pretty much takes us to the end. I'll let GB talk to the future direction. But one thing I just wanted to say is thank you for bearing with us. We do have an interactive mock-up, but we chose not to show you that today. Just get in touch with us, and I think as that becomes available, we'd love to show that to you. So thank you. So first of all, any questions? Put the URL up again? Okay, let's go backwards here. Okay, the URL that I'm going to show you is actually for the old system, but I thought and that's also available on the slide if you want to download the slide presentation. Is this the URL that you were looking for? Sorry. Go ahead, sir.
I have two questions.
Sure. Good question.
Any way to say, what have you changed in this interval?
There has definitely been discussion around that topic. Does someone want to take that one? Who's the best qualified to answer that one? Here you go, Juby. Sorry. Grab that.
Sure. The change event model that we talked about, it would be the mechanism to allow you to see what the deltas are between the version of the database that you have and what's available on the VATS website. And based upon that, you could see what the changes were.
So will I be able to do a search that says, give me everything that you changed in 3 months?
a selective download of just the deltas or the changes in the last, between what you have and what's on the website?
The value set name so I can look at them. And, you know, some of them are really big, but I don't have to search and say you added a new term for, you know.
I know definitely where your question's headed. If we had a searchable database that that lets you say from time A to time B, just show me everything that's changed, that would solve the problem, and packaging that and distributing that would be something useful. I think in the meantime, what we're going to do is we're simply going to, between different versions of the views, the particular views that are released, and I don't know how this affects value set specifically, but I think in terms of the views, there are going to be documents published that might list that data. I know certainly when value sets are versioned, when those change, the consolidated list of changes are available. But I think for now you may have to go through that yourself and actually look at it. So you may also have to slap that into a text pad and do a search on it.
That's the whole purpose with the change event. That's the purpose of our model.
That's where we're going.
So that you can do that, because we don't want you to have to download all of that. But it hasn't been designed.
Yeah.
And one other question.
Yeah, sure.
After I do some complicated search, I get to this nice page of stuff that's exactly what I want, but I can't save the URLs if it's just struts DO. Is there a way to save, either get a real page that has a separate URL so I can put a hyperlink? You know, next to IMDb, I have the FinBad's web page and my hyperlinks. So it'd be nice if I could actually store it. When I download the HL7 edition, whatever edition, I can go directly to the vocabulary pages. Either that or save my queries so that I can regenerate that set that I took so long to figure out and get to.
Rest assured, your concern is well understood by all of us, because we've actually been there, even on the current version of that. It gets even trickier when you talk about doing kind of dynamic page refresh, because what does that mean? If I'm looking at a particular page, where is the URL? Rest assured that even though we're looking at that feature functionality, we've got that concern very much in mind. The details haven't been entirely nailed down.
But that's one of the things that we're measuring ourselves by is can we solve that problem. Thank you. Thank you. I heard you saying that your client can be a .NET client. Yes, but you're not providing the object model. .NET.
Well, let me be clear. What we're doing as application designers for applications in Java that are directly accessing the service is we're actually taking kind of the client-facing portions of the service and exposing that as a jar file, and we're just including it directly in our project. That's going to be hard for you to do if you're writing in .NET, but if you're writing in Java, that's already available.
Okay.
In .NET, you would have to literally sit down with the spec and kind of go through it and say, okay, these are the calls that are, that are legal. This is the format of the data that's being returned. All of that is explicit in currently in Hessian, and also then obviously in SOAP, in the same way. And you'll be able to look at that definition and code your own objects. But yeah, currently at least for thinking, you'd probably have to do that yourselves. It might be a good point of order to maybe either look at doing that at some point in the future, or if a customer is really nice and they want to share that with us, we'll somehow, look at facilitating, somebody might look at facilitating, distribution of that code, although I don't know that that's the mission of our group. So that'll have to be revisited.
Okay, but at least do you provide the XML schema definition of that object model so that I can generate my own?
To the extent that it's XML, to the extent that the schema is XML, it would be provided. To the extent that it's some other format, that would obviously be provided. Data dictionary and explanation of what's going on, absolutely. Well, and that's a question that also ties back to the service, and so I also want to defer to some of my colleagues on that. But that's certainly a prerequisite for distribution of the web service, as being available to the user community at large. We're kind of in a special relationship here because we're actually building kind of the core functionality of the system. So we have access to to each other pretty much on a on a regular basis, an ongoing constant basis. So we haven't faced those issues, but that is part of our work product that is on the document.
So I'd like to simply take a time check. If the session is actually over, so we're going to probably take some more technical questions, or we'd be glad to answer your questions. And this is 3.0. We'll have point releases after it, where you're more than welcome to come to us with additional functionality. We will be going more towards a community model to allow you to build adapters and build other add-ons to this application that you can put back into the community. So we are moving more towards a little different model also.